outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of Bravada's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Well, hello again from the pandemic-infested state of California. I'm Wayne Jacobson. This is the God Journey, and they're shutting us all down again out here because the wave of the virus has just spread incredibly. Hospitalizations are up, and so they're shutting us down again, which is pretty tough on the economy. And it's amazing, through this whole time of these rising things, no one is talking about all the protests. Oh, it's all been caused by kids going out and doing this and that. And it seems so disingenuous to say, yeah, you know, we had people in the streets screaming and yelling at each other, and lots of people went out and marched, and they felt it was important enough to risk it. And this is the other side of that. This, at least I'm sure some of that had an impact, but no one can mention it because then you're against the protests. And then instead of saying, you know what, you did protests, you thought they were important, it has driven up this. Let's be honest about it. Let's not lie as they've done so often, whether it's over masks or, and I don't mean not wearing them. My goodness, I've got some of the weirdest friends who send me email about how masks are not helpful. Everyone take their masks. It's a, you know what? Medical people wear masks in surgery long before the pandemic because there's a reason that masks help contain disease instead of spread it. And I just, man, I tell you, I get really frustrated. All the conspiracy talk I hear and all the fear and frustration and the harbinger of doomsday scenarios coming out of Christianity and prophetic stuff and allegedly prophetic stuff. Let me say it that way, because the whole idea of most of the prophetic stuff, and I mean the fake prophetic, I don't mean the genuine, I believe in the genuine, but the genuine, as Jesus said, the spirit of prophecy is the spirit of Jesus. Spirit of prophecy is not fear, it's not somebody building a following. When you, people send me links, I click on a link, I'll watch 15 seconds of a video and say, this guy has not a clue who Jesus is. You can see it in his face, you can see the sternness, you can see the whole shtick he's bringing to this to try and give it weight, the dreams he's had and the dreams he's had before that came to pass. And now he's got this. Just, you know what? You follow Jesus today, you follow Jesus tomorrow, regardless of what happens 6 months from now, 10 years from now, you'll be ready. And God will be able to hold you through whatever it is that happens. I got someone from Europe, a good friend, who we were on the phone shortly after this pandemic began. This is probably late March, maybe early April, way back there. And as he was praying, and he and his wife were praying about this whole thing, one of the things he heard in his heart was, fallen, fallen is Babylon. The time of her end has come. And it's all the Revelation language. The great harlot Babylon, who has put its immorality across the world and lived on the bloodthirsty. And you can't read those passages and not going, you know what? I know communism's worse. I know terroristic countries are worse. I know dictatorships are worse. But when you talk about exporting its harlotries all over the world, U.S. has done more than that than anybody, just through its entertainment and its media and its over-sexualizing everything to make a buck. And maybe it is time. I have not a clue. I hear these things and I'm going, you know what? Here's what I trust. I trust that God's not lost control of anything, that God's well aware of what's happening. If this is going to cause a major readjustment in our world's thinking about a lot of things, let it come. We need some rethinking. I would hope it would help us draw together and care more. And instead, it has only polarized this country even more. But in the last 6 weeks, I can't tell you the exciting things we've had with the language of healing and people that are calling us to do training and people want to have a different conversation about this than what's allowed in the media and what's allowed in our political parties that seem to have more to gain by polarizing us than they do helping us. So I'm excited. We had a conversation this week on Language of Healing Live, which we're doing every other Tuesday. I'll put a link at the bottom of this. We had a great conversation about chapter 3 of the book, Pardon Me, Your Tribe is Showing. And if you haven't seen that, or haven't heard it, I'll put a link down. You can go check it out if you want to. Okay, I'm just back from my doctor's office this morning. My cardiologist, they did an echocardiogram on my refurbished heart from three and a half years ago now. I think I had that heart surgery to have a new valve put in that was defective from birth. And then I put a few miles on it on myself. And man, it just, everything looks good. I'm grateful for what science can do. I'm grateful for what God does in the midst of all that. And I'm not one of those people that sees a great disparity between God and science. I think true science works hand in hand with God. And God's the one that invented the science. God's the one that created the world the way he did, so it worked the way he did. And he's given us wisdom to uncover that, and I think that's amazing. So that's kind of fun. Anyway, my guest today on the on this version of the God Journey is you. It's I have got so much stuff that I have been saving for so long. I had some people in my heart to invite into this conversation this week, and I thought, you know what? I've been trying to get through a lot of this stuff, and it may take me 2-3 weeks to get through this stuff. I don't know how often I'll do it this way, because I hate doing podcasts alone, but I don't think this one's alone, because I'm involving you in it. People who have written me, sent me stuff, wanted input, just sharing their own story. I love this stuff. I love hearing other people's story. I'm telling you, if you could open my email every morning, yeah, there's some painful stuff in it. Yeah, there's some really hard stuff in it. But also in my email, man, are some of the best stories I get to hear of how God's touching people's lives and transforming them, and I get to share them with you. So here we go. First few emails. Those of you that have been listening on Tuesday mornings to Embracing His Glory, I don't know when you listen to it, but the Tuesday morning podcasts. Here's just some comments from people that have really touched my heart. I promise you, I have not done anything I've been more excited about than Embracing His Glory, even the one for next Tuesday. It's in my heart. I've yet to record it. I can't wait to record it, because this is the one for which it all hangs. Everything I've said up till now leads up to this, and then everything that I'll say after will hinge on this. So I'm really excited about getting to that. That'll be on Tuesday morning. Sorry, got to wait for that, because I'm not there yet. But a few emails from people quickly about the Embracing His Glory series. This is Mike from Maine. Wayne, just a quick note of encouragement for the Embracing His Glory series. The 20 minutes or so you and I, spend getting into the Word of the Father and examining how His love touches us in real ways is quickly becoming one of my favorite parts of the week on my work commute. I love how Jesus jumps out of each page of Scripture, and thanks to His patient work in me, has become more apparent in my life, and this series is just so reaffirming. This from Sharon. Probably the best podcast ever. I listened 2 days in a row already. I could start every morning with this. This message has been so encouraging to me with my dilemmas, the decisions that have plagued my mind for almost 2 years now. You have helped me loosen my grip, to be cheerful about letting go and seeing the bigger picture, and to trust. Because when it all comes down, His glory through me is what I want most, and you help bring me back to center. It's from Richard in Canada. Without a doubt, the very best series you've ever done, Wayne. I could highly recommend this for everyone. Angela, so good. These are so refreshing. The only problem I have is Tuesday only comes once a week. And Laura in Wisconsin, Wayne, thank you for taking the time to do these. It's putting words to so much I have been afraid to believe, while at the same time drawing me deeper into His grace and truth in my life. I am thankful this journey with Him never ends. And Doina in Romania wrote this: I want to let you know how special this is, and that I went back many times to listen again and again. When I felt tired and lonely and that God is nowhere to be found, I just went back and listened to that little podcast again, and it helped. It gave me hope that I will connect with God and rest in the fact that I have peace with Him. I'm so glad that you have done this series. So that's just some of it. I mean, I've got a lot more. Some of those I thought were just interestingly worded, and deeply appreciate people who are letting me know that somehow this is resonating home. And I know I don't like doing podcasts alone, but that has been fun for me. It's just the 20 minutes to take a look at some of the ways that God's been transformative in my life. Now on to some other emails that I think will be interesting for you. This from Marilyn. One of the greatest things I'm getting out of your podcast is a new perspective of God's view of me. Growing up in the religious institution, I've always believed God was against me because I was a sinner. I am now learning that Jesus didn't come to save me from His Father, but from evil, which uses sin to ensnare and alienate me from God, who has revealed His love for me in Jesus. The more I know how much God loves me, the more I'm able to love others. That's so true, my goodness. We've been so long embedded in this oppressive religious view that God can barely tolerate you, just looking at you through the blood of Jesus, he can barely tolerate you until you reach perfection someday, and then you'll be an honored servant. And perfection in this age is an elusive goal. And if that's the standard to be content, you never will be, not in this life. But our contentedness comes in knowing we're loved by the Father, knowing that love will over time transform us and set us free to live more deeply in him. This from Dave in Arkansas, I believe. I got AK here. Was that Alaska, Arkansas? You know, I thought I knew, and then when I see it, I don't know for sure. Anyway, my regret is that I was in my 60s before I left the religious system. I then started looking for the relationship with Jesus. The journey I'm on has been just as you described in this podcast, the one from with Courtney. I hear more and more and trust him more and more over years. The problem is, in my life, is my heart aches for my friends and acquaintances who are trapped in religion and who view me as having the problem. I have learned to ask lots of questions. My friends listen, then say, but, and will not allow the question. Do I have an incorrect concept of God? Or what if my pastor's teachings are incorrect? I've really enjoyed the podcast that are phone conversations of people struggling in their relationship with Jesus. I hope you can do more of these. That's an interesting request. Those happened. I didn't go out seeking people who would open up that way and be honest about their journey. Those happened. And if God has more of those for us, I'm more than happy to have conversations like that with people who are okay with me recording them. Whether they want to be identified or not is up to them. Because I know how powerful it is to hear that wisdom unfold inside a conversation with another person. And I don't even know where those things are going to go when we get started. We just kick them on and go. And then this, to finish up that from Dave, these first ones really illustrate the time and years it takes. This is an endurance race. But the farther I run, the better I understand that Jesus picks up my feet and I get to put them down. Dean wrote this. Just had to let you know, brother, that he loves me, has opened a door to allow God to change me the way I have always desired. I've struggled my entire adult life believing that God was so disappointed in my poor behavior, especially since I knew better. How could he possibly love me or accept me? The shack helped me a lot. And for the last 5 years or so, I have had good moments followed by bad moments, trying to accept the Father's love for me. I really believe I have turned the corner at last, having just finished your book. In every chapter, I came across one or more sentences that were showstoppers. I literally stopped reading and just soaked in what you had said. Bless you, brother, for receiving this message from God, for living it, and then being faithful to pass it along to the rest of us. I am 73. I have lived under performance Christianity my entire life. I've always been able to give a grace message to others, God loves you no matter what, and to believe it with all my heart for them. I just couldn't believe it for me until now. You brought a new perspective to Bible stories I have known since childhood that have opened my eyes to what is true. Paul prayed that the eyes of our hearts would be opened. You have done that for me. Thank you. Thank you, Dean. I appreciate that. I do think that's the work the Holy Spirit does, however. I'm glad my book was a helpful tool in his hands. You quote there one of my favorite prayers from Colossians chapter 1. Paul's praying for the Colossians, the eyes and ears of their heart would be opened to see the reality of who God is. When you know how God does his work, then you'll know how to do yours. And so much of what we've tried to do over the years is we're trying to do our work to get God to do his. Until you know how God works in you, transforming you, loving you, inviting you into freedom and joy and life, you'll have no idea how to join his work in the world. And I know that well. I spent 40 years trying to do stuff for God and haven't done much for him since. I get to do a lot of stuff with him. And the difference between those two is humongous. And then this from a good friend of mine, David, in Ireland. We have a mutual friend, John Beaumont, who passed away this spring. Nothing to do with COVID. He'd been elderly and sick for a while, and we had a little bit of exchange. I love what he wrote right here. This is what's so important. I think we've left out of, quote-unquote, our views of leadership. He wrote this, "Yes, John was like a spiritual father to me. I have never known anyone who was so ruthless in their obedience to the Lord, no matter what the cost. I learned far more by observing him than just by listening to what he said." Hear that right there. I learned far more by watching. I think that's what we miss to some extent in the Gospels. I bet the disciples learned far more by watching Jesus than they did the things that he said. And it's not that the things he said weren't valuable. They're, of course, valuable. And the things John would have said would, of course, have been valuable. But watching how someone actually lives the life tells you what they really believe. Words are cheap. Words are really cheap. The way we live has a great impact. Dave continues, you know where it says in Acts that the believers devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, etc. You often hear about the apostles' teaching, but not so often about their fellowship. I've never seen the word. I always thought the apostles' teaching and the fellowship house to house, those were two separate things. Dave's pulled those together, the apostles' teaching and their fellowship, that it was walking with them. It was seeing it in their life. We think of these people because we're so used to leaders and teachers being in green rooms and closeted away from individual exchanges. They're on a stage, and that's our engagement. So we are on a TV screen, worst of all, because everything on a TV screen is an illusion. It is. It's designed to be an illusion. It's not what's real. You know nothing about a person if you've only known them from seeing them on a stage or a TV screen. You know nothing about what makes them tick, nothing about how their life works. And what's to be gained? And this is why I need so many people in the world, why Jesus could say, boy, the world is in need of harvesters. It's ripe unto harvest. And pray the Lord would send laborers in the field, Matthew 9 and 10, because he knew that it's not just somebody's got a great teaching, a great book, a podcast, whatever. It's life to life. It's watching somebody live what you want to live and learning how to begin to walk that yourself and move on with it. Now, the political atmosphere, I made a few comments up front just that we're in. I've been in some great conversations about this with a lot of people for a lot of different reasons, not least have been some of the podcasts on here that have had to deal with racial issues or other kind of discord. This is what someone said in a conversation. I was talking with a friend. He said this, I am only beginning to realize how rude my faith made me. I'm only beginning to realize how rude my faith made me. Man, when I heard him say that, it brought flashbacks of years of feeling like I was on the home team and everyone else was on the away team. Not everyone else, everyone else not on my team. That the whole evangelical Christianity, Bible believing thing, we were right and the rest of the people were wrong. And there's almost a hostility in it that they need to be damned, they need to be punished for what they're doing. I watch it now. I watch it with Christian voices in the media. And I know the media selects rude voices because it sells time. It draws an audience. And they do it from the liberals' side as well. It's not just the conservative side, but so many Christians, and even some that pay for their own media, and it's not the media doing it to them. They know it works too. They know when I'm mean and nasty and the bad guys over there, that sells. And I tell you how fragmented as our world is, I want to just say it again. I am only beginning to realize how rude my faith made me. One of the things we've talked about on God Journey a lot is how religion makes us relationally challenged. It does, because we don't learn to be real. We don't learn to be honest. We learn pretense. We learn posturing. We learn so many things that are contrary to the way of Christ in our religious constructs. This is from Heather. She said this, moving to Africa forced me to realize that I still struggle with my racist roots. I still prefer to look at people who are different or not doing what I expect as others. I recently apologized to my son for telling him that I didn't understand his reasoning for wearing hoodies and sweatpants because he looked like a thug. Ugh. Being back in the U.S. now breaks my heart. Trying to have conversations with family members about race is disheartening. Man, I hear you, Heather. Sometimes on this podcast, the emails I take for being able, for talking about it, just they can be disheartening. But also I get emails that enliven me. I hear people shifting. I'm going to read you one in a moment of just transformation coming in someone's life that wasn't expecting it. So she continues, Heather does, my answer to their why does it always have to be about race is that it is about race. I don't understand why it isn't obvious. Acknowledging the struggle and injustice faced by others doesn't mean that a person has to counter with complaints of all lives matter or blue lives matter. I heard somebody compare that to you go to a wedding and the minister is pronouncing this couple husband and wife, and you have to stand up and say, well, my kids got married last year, and they're husband and wife too. When you have to say all lives matter or blue lives matter to someone saying black lives matter, not only are you missing the point, but you're being incredibly rude. To say black lives matter doesn't say that they're the only lives that matter. It doesn't say that other people don't matter. It's just saying in the injustice of our world, in some quarters by bad policing, not all policing, bad policing, those lives have not mattered as much as other lives, and they need to. So she, Heather continues, so how do we counter this people we love when we want to, who we want to continue to like? We prep our boys to not initiate discussions about politics and religion when we visit family. But I can't bear adding injustice to the list. I would love it if you might address having discussions of injustice with those we love to future podcasts. I want to give grace, understanding that I have many beams in my own eyes, but these conversations are exhausting. I feel like conversations about immigrants, Muslims, and anyone else who are not white Republicans have not made a difference and only lead to tension and guilt on my end. Language of Healing Live this week about living beyond our tribes was beyond belief. I want to say this, and I think one of the things we made a point of in the book, you know, how do you have these conversations with people who are blind to the reality? And that is, you can't. The language of healing and that whole idea of being able to talk reasonably, rationally about injustice is not for everyone. There are some people who are so hunkered down in their narrow view of the world that they're not going to have this conversation. And you can find that just by making a hint, making a suggestion here or there, and seeing what happens, seeing how people close up or get defensive, or I don't see color at all, I'm colorblind, or all the ways that we hide from an honest discussion of the pain that racism has caused in our world and in our country specifically. And not just our country, it's been all over the world. Getting people of different tribes to work together. I mean, prior to the founding of a country like this or the French Revolution, societies were only held together by strong kings who could kill people who didn't do it their way, or dictators in our common day. Dictators can make a society function, but when you try justice, mutual respect, we're going to learn how to live together with our differences, not that we have to agree, we all have to do the same thing. That's the challenge. And no, not everybody's ready for that conversation. I've posited, I think about 72% of people are. So find the people you can have conversations with. Find them. And in those conversations, man, amazing stuff can happen. And that's what I get to see a lot. And I love the conversations I'm in. I love seeing where change is happening. But that doesn't mean, I mean, there are people in my family that you can't have this discussion with. And I'm an extended family. And so I don't. Now, if they say something rude, something I consider to be a bit racist in my presence, I'm going to push back a little bit, but I'm not going to push back by name calling. I'm not going to say, boy, that's a racist statement, because they can't hear. I'm going to say, do you think that's fair? I may ask that question. Do you think that's a fair comment? Do you think everybody is like that? Do you think the violent looters were the defining reality of the protests? Do you really? Was there not something real to protest here? And did not somebody else try to hijack that for criminal purposes? And now, then you get a bit of a discussion, maybe, and maybe you don't. Maybe you just get anger and defensiveness. But I'll tell you this, Heather, I don't think there's any reason you need to feel guilt or shame in trying to open this conversation for others. That's why those who perpetuate white supremacy in a society, I don't mean white supremacy in the sense that whites are better than blacks. I just mean a society that favors whites. The reason people don't want to talk about it is because it risks change. And they like things the way it is. And if they're not ready to talk about it, you're not going to be able to make them. But putting a thought in here and there, or being afraid of them so that I'm going to be silent, not anymore. I don't mind if people around me are a bit awkward. I don't. And I'm not trying to be mean, and I'm not trying to name call. I'm trying to just invite people to a different kind of conversation. This came to me from a lady in the Deep South. And I love this. She said, just finished the book, A Language of Healing. And I will be rereading it. The first half was Greek to me, but the second half has left me gobsmacked right between the eyes. My mind is just reeling. My heart feels like it's bleeding. I had a pivotal moment at 18 where I realized I had taken on the very racist opinions of my family. I was determined from that moment on to be intentional to see people, not their skin color. Then I got saved eventually, and I was seeing how right I was and how wrong other beliefs are. Here we go again. But I only saw it in Christian denominations. Other religions were to be considered dangerous. No Jesus, no salvation. Those poor people, judgment. I recently have come under attack from Facebook posts that express my feelings about respecting the national anthem, and also received a venomous response from one of my clients when I reacted to a post about Mary Poppins being racist. To me, it was ridiculous. When I realized how much it offended her, I removed my post. Relationship is more important to me than opinion. Well, you could underscore that, right? Or just pause and, as Arnita says, have a Selah moment. Relationship is more important to me than opinion. At least I thought so. I still do not think I'm racist, but this book has explained bias in a way that revealed what could be going on in my opinions that are being judged as racist. I am undone. She told me in a response that that's a good thing. Because I said, are you okay? She said, being undone is a good thing. And it is. All this to say, this book has made a huge impact on me. I want to be intentional about being Jesus to all those I interact with. I underline that too. That's a great line. I want to be intentional about being Jesus, or at least the best representation of Jesus you can be on a given day. To all those interact with, I want to confront my bias and, yes, even areas that I'm totally unaware where I may be racist. Now, someone in the deep south starts out, I'm not a racist, I'm not this, and I'm defending things that I know some of you have defended, whether it's the national anthem, and we know how those conversations get going, or upset that Blindside or Mary Poppins is racist. That kind of ticks you off. Or you might pause and figure out why that is, and you might find yourself in a better conversation. At the end, she says, I want to confront my biases and, yes, even areas that I'm totally unaware where I may be racist. I think this is partly where we're losing the conversation. When you start calling people racist, and in the world I come from, racist has an intent behind it. And I think a lot of the white preferences in our society that's hurtful to other people is not so much intended as it's just ignorance. We didn't realize that it was being built. We were the majority culture. We were just doing things that commercially made sense, but that left other people out. And then we made judgments about people because of their skin color in terms of their intelligence or whatever, their ability to participate in society at the same level, or our respect for their abilities or qualities. And that's changing. I hope it's changing. I love this time. I have more people I know leaning into this conversation rather than reacting to it. And I know some are still reacting to it. I get it. But I think it's helpful. And I'm really glad that this is the kind of stuff God began working on my heart, not in the last few months. We've been at this now a few years. Precious few. I wish it had been longer in my life. I wish I'd been more aware earlier. But I appreciate that I'm growing aware now, and I appreciate that I have people in my life that can help me understand this. And so I don't have to react to it. I can actually respond in a way that's more loving to others and more realistic in my own soul. There's a blog I read. It's a sports blog. I read it now and then, but the guy who writes it, and I love this sports blog, to be honest. And sometimes he does this. He backs out of the conversation. He was asked about, this was in the heat of all that was going on in April and May in response to the death of Ahmaud Arbery and George Floyd. He said that he was asked the question about how we could be more accepting of our differences. He said this: how do individuals in this country become more accepting of differences, more accountable for their actions, and find more common ground? Now, you have a question like that, man, I'm in. He said it begins with eliminating or at least overcoming our anger. Anger is a powerful human condition that exists naturally in all of us and is easily stimulated. Manipulative people prey on our anger. Please don't allow it. Now, that's coming from a sports guy, sports writer. Please don't allow it. And I would say not only anger, manipulative people prey on anger, manipulative people prey on fear. They use fear to divide us. They use anger to garner their power. The whole, we have a common enemy. We get to hate, whether it's the media, whether it's the Democrats, whether it's the religious conservatives, whoever it is that your group has to hate to exist, damages itself by doing that. And I had a conversation this week with someone who was saying the whole political climate is the battle of good versus evil. And his side was the good, and anybody on the other side was evil. And when you come to that conclusion, when you realize that, man, and Jesus or Paul warned us, right? We're in wrestle not against flesh and blood. If you're putting people in the evil category and you in the good category because they disagree with you, you have already been corrupted by the very thing this man writes about here. Anger is a powerful human condition. We all have it. It exists naturally and is easily stimulated. Manipulative people prey on our anger. And I would say the same thing. Manipulative people prey on our fear. I love that Jesus came to disconnect us from both. He didn't want to use anger and fear to put his kingdom in the world. He wanted love. And teaching us to be loved, to live loved, to trust, that disarms all that anger and fear that makes us so easily manipulated by people who want our vote, our money, our support, our whatever. This is not the time for division. This is the time for understanding and respect. And yeah, I do think that's the majority of people right there. They're not the majority of people with microphones, because anger on microphones gathers audience. But I'm telling you, going down that road makes you a more dangerous person in the world. And this from Jennifer, I thought it's an interesting perspective about the pandemic. She asked me if I could read an article, and she linked it here about grief. The discomfort you're feeling is grief. I'll link it in the bottom of the podcast if you want to read it, because I think there's some really worthwhile things in there. She said, while reading it, I kept thinking about the verse in Isaiah that says that Jesus was a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. Maybe I'm taking this out of context, but it's good to know that we have a God who knows how we're feeling. And she's talking about that unsettledness or depression or despair people are feeling in the pandemic. And it's grown in California, too, over the last few days, just because our state that was opening up has closed down very tightly again. And the idea kids were maybe going back to school in August, and it doesn't look like so much now. And these kids, for mental health reasons, for other reasons, I mean, just being isolated in their homes day after day, this is a challenge. This is challenging our nation in a way we've never been challenged before. And some of us aren't doing well. Some of us, I mean, there's one kid out here went to some get COVID party because the 30-year-old just saying, hey, we're just going to get over with, at a party with a COVID person there. 31-year-old guy that went to that party died a week later of COVID simply because they're not informed enough to know. This is a very serious disease. It is changing our culture. And no matter how fearful you are, depressed you are, tired you are, rebellious against government officials you are, because has government overreached during this? Yes, government's both overreached and it's underreached. There's times people have disarmed the awareness that this is a significant disease that we're going to have to manage together as a culture, and have encouraged people to go off on their own, and it's had horrible consequences in perpetuating this disease in the U.S. in a way that it hasn't in Europe and other places, at least not yet. And yeah, part of that had to do with protests and thousands of people on the streets yelling and screaming and feeling like they finally had a moment. We've still got to turn that moment into actual change in life. But anyway, Jennifer continues that Jesus, because it says this is comfort you're feeling, is a form of grief. There's things, hopes and dreams, businesses being closed, maybe yours, then how am I going to make the next payment? And part of, I guess the article's point is part of what you're feeling is grief. And then she's drawing us to this Isaiah prophecy about Jesus. He was a man acquainted with sorrows. She said, I've been listening to the God Journey since 2010, went back and started from the beginning. I love the new voices that you've had on lately, Julie, Kyle, Tracy, Arnita. My husband and I attended a gathering in Lexington that you were at during a very trying season in our lives. Husband lost his job. Father was in the end stages of a 4-year battle with cancer, and my daughter had just been diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. I myself have had 2 type 1 diabetes. 3. 2. I myself have had type 1 diabetes and several other autoimmune diseases most of my life. Father seems so close to me during grief. And really, he has ever since I was a teen. However, I see so many people I know struggling with grief, pushing it aside, staying either in their anger or denial phase. Not to say that I think we all have to go through every phase the same way. I really like that. I don't know that I have the expertise to talk more about that. But I really, if you're hurting and if you're in grief over the way your life has changed and you're just tired of wearing a mask and tired of being in a culture that's scaled back its ability to interrelate with each other and not being able to hug your friends and sit down for dinner in a restaurant and do some of those things, which we can't do right now in California. And you're feeling if you're feeling grief in your heart, I love the thought that Jesus was a man who was acquainted with grief. And there's a space to lean into inside Jesus where he becomes real, the sharing, the fellowship of our sufferings, as Paul wrote about in Philippians 3. It's really just encouraging to me. This is a spot to lean in and embrace and behold. It's fabulous. I've got some more stuff here, but I noticed the clock's kind of moving on us here, and it's going to be out of it shortly. Most of these things kind of switch to things about church, and we may get back to those sometime, and whether people are coming back after the pandemic and some of what God's doing there. But I want to conclude this just because we're kind of getting to that point of time that I think it's probably a good time to end. This is written from a friend of mine who works in a care center for very disturbed people. And he's a real personal, he's not a medical professional, as far as I know. And if I got this wrong, I apologize. But he just does some very rudimentary care for people who need it very desperately. And he had an experience recently, and he wrote this to me. And I, in the midst of what I just said about grief and finding our resolve inside Jesus, not our resolve inside the circumstance of being fixed. Isn't that where always where our grief goes, you know? It's Mary and Martha. Jesus, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. It focuses on externalizing our grief to blame somebody else, to blame the government, to blame the culture, to blame the pandemic, to blame where it came from, to blame all kinds. I mean, just that's how unhealthy grief works. Healthy grief is able to get inside the pain and invite Jesus there and let Jesus resolve the pain, the sense of abandonment perhaps you're feeling or the fear of uncertainty or whatever. Let Jesus into that pain, because our resolution isn't fixing the circumstance. If it is, you've got to wait a long time before we resolve this virus, be it through just wearing out on its own, herd immunity, be it a vaccine, be it whatever. If your hope is in resolving this, and you've got some very, very hard days ahead because we're going to be at this a while. But he wrote this to me, and it just really touched my heart. It's not about the pandemic. It's not anything. In fact, it was called Whispers in the Cracks. Starts this way. Cracks. They represent pain, vulnerability, and an entry point for disease when viewed by a nurse while looking at the skin. I sat at the feet of a patient with cracks all over his feet, abrasions over other parts of his body, and swollen hands from punching people and walls. This patient was described to be a monster by numerous people in numerous ways and for numerous reasons. I sat on the floor at his feet to apply medicated cream and thought of the jaw he broke of one of my co-workers, and I had to push a sense of fear away. And as I started to apply the cream, I heard him state some form of gratitude, but I only heard the tone, a beautiful whisper that was full of appreciativeness. The cracks looked painful and intense, like the anger he expressed toward others that brought him to the hospital. His short life has been full of raging anger, and he described later how he, his siblings, and his meth-addicted parents resolved all conflicts by knocking the S out of each other. Knowing this made his whisper full of gratitude all the more profound. I massaged the cream into his feet for as long as I could, with a hope that his gratitude would linger along with my whispered kindness that I assumed he has not experienced much of in his life. There is a whisper of kindness breathing to a world dominated by empire darkness, and I hear it more and more. The kindness sits at my soul's feet, washes them, and applies a healing ointment. There is no other response to give but gratitude, with full acknowledgement of my own monstrous defeats to deal with pain and anger. This kindness lingers and pulls me toward desiring more. Every fiber of my being wishes to believe my patient can hear this whisper. I believe this patient, with so many cracks, vulnerabilities, and openings for a disease to enter into his young soul, has a place to whisper gratitude and the ability to know love. I believe this to be true for him, for me, and for everyone else living in this monstrous empire. There is a love that whispers into cracks. There is a love that whispers into cracks. This is just, you know, Jesus washing the disciples' feet. This is so close to that story. And how Jesus, even with us, in the soul-numbing world we live in the political divisiveness, in the crusty need of this pandemic, in the vitriol that goes from person to person or person to institution, there's a whisper. There's a voice coming at you as God seeks to massage your feet, to heal the cracks, but not just heal them, whisper into them and through them. It reminded me of what Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians about we hold this treasure in earthen vessels, in cracked pots, but the cracks allow the glory to shine out. In our weakness, he's made strong. And Paul goes on to talk about that as well, that in the moment where you're in grief, in the moment where you're in pain, in those moments when you only have anger and violence to strike out with for all that you have suffered and endured, and you can't even find another way, there's a whisper coming at you, a whisper of hope, a whisper of love, a whisper that can get in even through the cracks you despise to bring healing to your soul. And before we finish, let me just make an announcement. This Sunday morning, we're going to hold another God Journey after show at 10 o'clock a.m. from 10 to 11 Pacific Daylight Time. If you'd like to join me in the Zoom room, you need to write so I can send you an invitation. That's WayneJ@Lifestream.org. If you'd like to just stream it live online, same time, we'll stream it at the God Journey Facebook page, and hope to have you join us.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com